ജയം വിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം തേല പ്രവിഷ്ട ഓം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗപ്രേമനെ All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namam Shupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Dinamini Namaste Saraswadevam Gauravani Prajarane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatya Deshadarane ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാൽ ശ്രീമൽഭാഗവദാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാനാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാദസ്ത്വം നോ യദ പ്രഭോ നാമ സംകീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവപാപ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിംപനം ജന്മാദ്യസ്സ യതോന്വയാദിതരതശ്ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാട് തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തിയൽസുരയം തേജോർവാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷ ധാന്നാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി ധർമ്മപ്രോജ്ജിത കൈതവോത്ര പരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണാം സതാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിംവാപരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യമരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ര കൃതിവി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭീതർക്ഷണാം നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുഗമുഖാതമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോ രസികാ ഭൂരി ഭാവുകാഹ സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമാ യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം അനുഭേദം അഭേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈവായനോ വിരഹകാതരമാജ്ജുഭാവ പുത്രേതി തന്മയതയത്തരവോഭിനേതുക്തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിം ആനതോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖിലശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപമതിതീർഷതാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനുമുപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേത് കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണുക്കൊണിതാതൃതാനോ മമ വാചി വിചംബരാ മുരാരേ മധുരേന്ന കണികാഭി കാഭി കാഭി നമഃ ഓം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമദേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിൻഹി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യാദേശധാരിണേ ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശ യാസം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുരാദീഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദപരമാനവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിതചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായം അതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശമനിശം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണം ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ മോഹം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ Last Sunday, we were discussing about three kinds of devotees, which is, first one is the Uttamadhikari, called the first-class devotee, and then the Madhyamadhikari, the second-class devotee, and Kanishthadhikari, or Prakrita Bhakta, as he is called, is the third-class devotee. So we have seen that Hari Maharshi, who was talking to King Nimi, he did not discuss too much about the Madhyamam and Prakritam. That means the second class and the third class, you can say, devotees. But all the rest of the discussions is only about the first class devotee. Only about the first class devotee. The reason being that by knowing the qualities of a first class devotee, we will also try to achieve that status at some time in some birth, if not in this lifetime. So anyway, here he said that, he gave the examples, so many examples were there, how the consciousness of a, that is the most important thing, the consciousness of a first class devotee, what it is like. It is not the appearance, it's not anything else to do with the person, it is just the consciousness of the person. Because of Krishna is burning inside that person, automatically he has finished everything with this world. Virtually he is ready to go back to the spiritual world to associate with Krishna. Therefore, if you see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will notice some perfect examples of this, devotee of this category. First one is Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto. If you look at Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu, what did we see there? Prahlad Maharaj was always a devotee of an exemplary character, in the sense that never once that he was disturbed in his mind by under any circumstances. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while discussing this, it is said that everywhere I am seeing Krishna, I don't see anything else in this creation, he says. Hiranyakashipu says, I don't see Krishna anywhere. So opposite, father and the son. Funny saying, everywhere I see Krishna. Wherever I look, all I find in any direction, upside, downside, everywhere it's only Krishna, he says. Hiranyakashipu says, where is he? Where is he? He's searching for Krishna everywhere. So that is the difference between the pure devotee and Hiranyakashipu. Then, so what happened was when Prahlada was tortured, who tortured him? Hiranyakashipu tortured him, isn't it? He tortured him. What all did he do? He poked the spear into his body and then he poisoned him. When he poisoned him, he took poison and then comes back and pays his obeisances to his father. After he took the poison and then everything got digested nicely, then he comes and pays obeisances to the father. Father gets more upset about it. Then he calls his men and asks him to torture him with the spears and rods, everything, to beat him up. They've done all that, nothing was happening. He comes back and pays his obeisances to Hiranyakashipu again. And then he rolled him from the top of the hill to the ground, from the top of the building to the ground. He threw him out from there. And then after that he comes back and pays his obeisances to Hiranyakashipu. Like this carried on for quite a while. That is that Prahlada's consciousness. So who has protected him? Krishna has protected him all this time. So a pure devotee is in that category, that under all circumstances, it is Krishna's responsibility to protect him. Because he has attained that stage already. There is no more false ego in that person. There is no more false ego in that person. And all his prayers to Krishna is always to develop devotion in others' heart. Asking Krishna to give devotion to others also, exactly like the way he has got. He doesn't want anything from this world. And for those who are giving trouble to him or giving him pain, he completely still accepts them as Krishna's part and parcel and pays his respects to them. So that was the nature of Prahlada Maharaj. In the Bhagavadam, if you look into the 7th canto in the capital chapter 5, you will see these things what happened there with Prahlada. It says there that the it is in the how the torture went on, and after the torture there is a reference to Narada Maharshi talks about Prahlada's consciousness. That's very important to notice there. It says there Nairudeyadi samadishta bhartravai shulabanaya tigma damstra karalasya tamra smashru shiroruha. That the demon, the servants of Hiranyakashipu, thus began striking the tender parts of Prahlada Maharaj's body with their tridents. The demons all had fearful faces, sharp teeth and reddish coppery beards and hair, and they appeared extremely threatening. Nadando bhairavam nadam chindi bindhidi vadinam asinam chahanan shalai prahradam sarvamarmasu. That making a tumultuous sound, shouting, chop him up, pierce him, they began striking Prahlada Maharaj, who sat silently meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these are the punishments that was given to Prahlada by Hiranyakashipu. In response to that, what is happening to Prahlada is spoken in the next verse. Pare brahmani anirdeshe bhagavat akhilatmani yuktatmani abhashanam asannam apunye sevasal kriyaham. Pare brahmani anirdeshe bhagavat akhilatmani. Prahlada is seeing Krishna in everyone, in every living entity. He is seeing in those who are torturing him also. He was seeing Krishna there. Imagine that. Somebody is torturing you and you are seeing Krishna in him. And he says, Krishna is doing this, so what do I have to do about it? Same thing with Hiranyakashipu also. He is seeing Krishna. Akhilalpani, Bhagavati Akhilalpani. In every living entity, Prahlada is seeing Krishna. Prahlada pare brahmani anirdeshe. That is what happens, that a devotee who has attained that status, he cannot see anyone different from Krishna's body. That is why we say, Sarvabhudeshu yapashel bhagavad bhavam alpana. Everywhere Bhagavan, everywhere Krishna is present. But Krishna is not there. There is no place where Krishna is not present. Such a vision, that is a pure devotee's vision. So, pare brahmaneer deshe bhagavat yakila alpani bhagavadi akila alpani. Even though a person who has no assets, it says here, yuktatmani abhala asan apunyasyeva salkriyaham. It says, even though a person who has no assets in pious activities performs some good deed, it will have no result. Thus, the weapons of the demons had no tangible effects upon Prahlada Maharaj because he was a devotee undisturbed by material conditions and fully engaged in meditating upon and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unchangeable, who cannot be realized by the material senses, and who is the soul of the entire universe. That is the most important thing. Pare Brahmaneer Deshe is the soul of the entire universe. That, and he is saying here, Yuktatmani Abhlashanam Abunyasyeva Salkriyaham. Then a person who has no assets in pious activities performs some good deed, it will have no result. It is like that, it says. that unless there is some pious activities, even if you perform a good deed, the result need not come. The result will only come if you have some pious activities to your credit. Otherwise, that is why in this world you find sometimes different people perform different same activity. But somebody gets a result and somebody doesn't get the result. What is the reason behind it? Reason is this, that someone who has performed pious activities, he should get the result for that. Therefore, his activities turned out to be fruitful. Someone else who has no pious activities to his credit, although he performs something, he may not get the result. Result is not guaranteed, in other words. So that is what it is saying. Similarly, Narada Maharshi is saying here that Prahlada was all, these people who were torturing him, they were torturing him but nothing was happening. Just like the person who has done something without any pious activities to his credit, so nothing was coming back. The results were not coming for them. So that is what how the laws are controlled by Krishna. Krishna is actually the giver of the results. We forget that all the time. We think that we should do something, the results must come. Krishna says, need not. It need not come. There is somebody else who is actually rewarding the result that we have to know. This is where the difference between Mimamsakas and Vedanta philosophy is. Mimamsaka says, if you perform pious activities, results must come. If you perform sinful activities, results will come. Krishna says, need not be. Krishna actually refutes the argument of the Mimamsaka. Jaimini Maharshi, who was a disciple of Vedavyas, brought out this Purva Mimamsa philosophy. And this Mimamsa philosophy lasted for a very, very long time. That is how the sacrifices started. So in that philosophy, in the Mimamsa philosophy, it says that if you perform good activities, good sacrifice, there is no necessity to worship a personal god. If you perform pious activities or perform sacrifices, the results will come. You can go to heavenly planets, enjoy there as long as you like. And when the results are finished, you can come back here and again continue your pious activities. And like this way, you can enjoy your life all the time in this world as well as the heavenly planets. Krishna says, no, it need not be. Because as far as Krishna is concerned, Krishna says that always remember that there is somebody who has to sanction the results for you. That will come to that later when Krishna discusses the Mimamsa philosophy later in the Ekadasham, it will come. So here, anyway, exactly in the same way, these people were torturing Prahlada, but it was not working on him because it was the way it was done was not, the people who were performing were not sanctioned by Krishna. Krishna has not sanctioned them. Therefore, the results were not coming. Unless you have Krishna's sanction, all your work and endeavor in this world will fail. This is the point. Unless we have Krishna's sanction, all our effort and work in this world will fail. It may not bring results. This is the point. So, eventually, Krishna says here, Prayase apahade tasmin daityendra parishankita chakara tad vasubhyayan nirbandhena yudhishthira. My dear King Yudhishthira, when all the attempts of the demons to kill Prahlad were futile, the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, being most fearful, began contriving other means to kill him. So, this is mentioned in the seventh canto in relationship with Prahlad. Later on you will find the same thing mentioned again. What was Prahlada's consciousness at that time? It says here, Pratyagalpasya rūpena, drishya rūpena ja svayam, vyāpya avyāpadamirdeśyo, anirdeśyo vigalpidāha. This is important. Because Prahlada is here, Narada Maharshi is saying about Prahlada. What was Prahlada was, what he was experiencing in his realized state. It was like this, Pratyagalpasya rūpena. Inside, Krishna is illuminating there. He is burning inside. Krishna is fully consciousness. Krishna consciousness was so full inside. Krishna is burning inside. Outside, everywhere there is Krishna. Nothing else except Krishna. Pratyagalpa sarubena, drishya rubena ja swayam. Pratyagalpa means the self inside. The soul inside. And drishya rubena, that means what he is seeing outside. Drishya rubena ja swayam. Also Krishna outside everywhere. And then, Vyava Vyapaka Nirdesha, Anirdesho Vigalpidaham. Vyava Vyapaka Nirdesham. He is distributed everywhere. Everywhere, Krishna's presence is being experienced by Prahlada. So, now you can see that a devotee who has come to the Uttaradhikari platform. It is not an ordinary person. It's not an ordinary person. The realization of Krishna is so high that inside, outside, everywhere, it's only Krishna for him. Nothing different than that. That is what is mentioned in that. That in the pure devotee states, the difference is in the vision. Difference is in the vision, in the drishti. Drishti means vision. The world is the same. Nothing has changed, but the person has changed. What we try to do, we try to change the world, isn't it? Our vision doesn't change. We think everything is wrong with the world. The world has to be sorted out first. That's what we try to do. But a pure devotee, what he does is, he changes his vision. It comes to the proper vision. Proper vision means in full Krishna consciousness. At that time, he sees the world differently. He sees the world differently. And that's the only way things can change. That's what is mentioned here. That so, Prahlada's story is mentioned in this connection. Prahlada's story is mentioned in this connection. Then, so, so Hari Maharshi is saying here that in relationship with those questions, what he has said, how the pure devotee. This is what King Nimi wanted to know. Exactly like Arjuna wanted to know, King Nimi also wanted to know how he reacts in this world, how he deals with this world. That's more important to him, isn't it? Because a pure devotee, his consciousness is such that when he deals with this world, how things happen. That how does he walk, how does he eat, like Arjuna asked about Sthita Prajna in the same way. That that's the same question he was asking. Then, in the next chapter, in the same thing you will find later, that that the a devotee who has come to this platform, he is always seeing that karmam is concerned, it does not bother him anymore. Karmam does not bother him anymore. He does not give up karmam like the way we give up karmam. We give up karmam due to our frustration with karmam, isn't it? Some frustration with karmam, or karmam, we perform karmam if it is, results are beneficial to us. That's how we take up karmam. But here it is said, his giving up karmam is also a little different. Just like, they give the example, you know, when the coconut, when you want to take the pulp from inside, you scrape the coconut. You scrape as much as you can, but eventually there will be something left behind in the coconut still, isn't it? Completely you cannot take it out, because then the shell also start coming with it. So you take as much as you can and then leave the shell. So there is some coconut still sticking with the shell. It's not gone. That is the kind of way we give up karma. Whereas a pure devotee or a first class devotee, when he gives up karma, the example is a little different. There what happens is that his connection with karma goes away in such a way that if you have seen coconuts, when it's fully dry, the shell will separate, the inside portion, the white portion, that will separate from the shell. And when you shake it, you can see the thing actually making noise inside. Why? It has lost its connection with the shell. So similarly, here also, if you have not experienced this, when you go to Kingsbury in VB's, you can find coconuts, buy their one and look at it. They sell both sides of coconuts, where the pulp is there and the one without pulp has completely left the shell. So you can take it and shake it and see yourself where this example will fit in properly. Why it's given like that is that the pulp inside completely segregates from the shell and it is so dry, the moisture has completely gone away because they have dried in the sun. And then they extract the oil from the pulp. Inside they take out the oil. But at this point, because the moisture has gone away, it does not stick with the shell anymore. Similarly, in the first class devotee's case also, karmam is not sticking anymore. He has no karmam for his own. He is not himself. He is Krishna's. He is Krishna's. From now on, he is Krishna's. All the work he is doing is for Krishna's. There is no separate work for him to maintain his body. There is no separate work for him to maintain his body. There is no separate endeavor. Everything what he does is for Krishna's. That is the status of that pure devotee. Pure devotee state. Then, and such a person will find it very, very hard to execute ordinary karmam in this world. Logam vivaharam. Vivaharam is impossible for him. He cannot do anything. Because he himself, he is Krishna's property and he has no karmam of his own, independent karmam of himself. He has nothing to do in this world. Body, I'm not this body, he has realized it already. And this body is also not mine. Two things. First thing, I'm not this body. He has realized that. And he has also realized this body is not mine. Imagine that situation. Imagine that situation. We are all thinking this body is, I am this body and this body is mine. Isn't it? That's our realization. A first class devotee's realization is that I am not this body and this body does not belong to me. Everything is Krishna's. The body is only meant for one purpose, for doing service to Krishna. Krishna's service. That's the only thing. False ego has completely gone. False ego has completely gone. No enmity or any kind of ill feeling towards another living entity. Ill feeling towards another living entity. So this is the nature of the devotees, of the Uttama Dhyari. Uttama Dhyaris are always like that. That's why they are very special. And that's why it has to be explained in detail again and again to tell us what they are like. So, generally, we are saying that, how do they survive in this world then? That question will come, isn't it? How do they survive in this world? They have to survive in this world, but they also have their own ways of dealing with situations like this. Once it so happened, a sannyasi went to a village. And in that village, he lived for some time and he was walking to the next village. While walking to the next village, the people in this village warned him that on the way in the forest there is a big hole underneath the tree and there is a huge, powerful snake who lives there. And he will create trouble for you, so you be careful while going that route. They warned him like that. He said that I'm used to the snakes because he had the capacity to control them and talk to them also with the snakes, to converse with them. So he went very fearlessly, walked through, and he saw this snake coming out. As soon as the snake saw him, it started, he wanted to bite him and started to hissing at him. It came to him. So immediately caught hold of the snake and asked him, why you are doing this? Why you are always doing this to people? That don't you realize that what you are doing is already damaging your own life? It's going to cause you more problems like that. So the snake asked him, these first class devotees, they reached such a stage that they have friendship with all the other living entities. The fear we feel with another living entity is only because of our bodily identity. And that particular living entity is fearful of us. And therefore it reacts like this, like all the animals in the forest, the snakes, and everything is reacting to us in that way because of the mutual fear. If you remember, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to forest, Jharkhand forest, he was dancing. Who was dancing with him? The tigers, the elephants all started dancing. So other living entities also, when they see a first class devotee, give up the enmity, immediately that fear goes away. They react only because of the fear in their heart, but that fear has also goes away from them. When they see a first, these are all the symptoms of a first class devotee. A first class devotee's presence is such that no one is fearful of him, and he is not fearful of anybody because of the realization of Krishna everywhere. These are the situation with him. So our sannyasi also was advanced enough that the snake did not bother him, and neither the snake felt any enmity towards the sannyasi. So sannyasi gave these instructions to him and left. So the snake stayed back, took the sannyasi's instructions seriously. So for some time the snake didn't come out and give any trouble to anyone. So the boys in the village started thinking maybe the snake is dead. They went to the hole and started putting big sticks inside, like boys always do that, isn't it? That's their hobby. Giving pain to all the other living entities. If they see stray dogs, throw stones at them. Anything like that. So they put the big sticks into the hole and started poking the snake inside. So the snake came out. Eventually couldn't stay inside. He came out. But as soon as they saw the snake, they all ran away. They didn't stay. They started throwing stones at him from there. Snake didn't do anything. So the snake reacted like this, and then the boys threw stones at him and hurt him badly. And then eventually the boys left. So the snake went back to the hole again. After some time, the sannyasi was coming back from the other village. On the way back, he thought he will see his disciple, what has happened to him. So he went near the hole and chanted some mantra, the snake came out, realizing that the person who has given me this advice has come back. So when he came out, he was fully bruised all over the body. So this sannyasi asked him, what has happened to you? So the snake tells him that I took your advice very seriously and I didn't react to anybody, and this is what I got, he says to the sannyasi. So sannyasi says to him, I only told you not to bite others, but you can frighten others. Krishna has given you another capacity, hissing, isn't it? Hissing is the way the snakes frighten others. That hissing sound from the snake, that's enough. So you should have done that. Why did you not do it? He said. So I thought I was not supposed to do that, he said. No, he said you should do that. You can frighten others, but not harm anybody. That way he gave the instruction. So that's the same thing here. That the pure devotees' survival in this world is very difficult for them, because people turn to them with all sorts of all sorts of understanding. They expect him to comply with the rules of this world. They expect him to give them benedictions and blessings. They expect him to toe the line of the society and things like that. But that doesn't happen. In one instance, what happened was, there was a very great scholar. He was a Shastri. This Shastri used to go around. He was very learned. And he used to go around in debating with all the great scholars in the country. He used to do that. That was his happiness. Going around and debating with people. He was very learned, highly qualified and learned. He used to go around and debate with people. In one instance it so happened, a group of brahmanas realized that nobody could beat him. He was coming and taking away all the prizes from the king. So the group of brahmana decided that they will pray for the birth of a child who has the ability to beat this person, the Shastri. So for many, many days, many brahmanas sat together and chanted the various hymns from the Rig Veda and offered ghee to the deity. And after that they handed over the ghee to the mother to take. And when she became pregnant, one mother became pregnant and the baby was fed for full 10 months. The mother of the baby was fed full 10 months with the ghee, what was offered to the deity, and purified with the chanting of the Vedic hymns by these brahmanas. The result was that after 10 months, when the baby was born, at the time of the birth itself, the baby was extraordinarily intelligent. Extraordinarily intelligent. How intelligent it was to know. What he used to do was, he will sit at home and the crows used to come to eat the food in the back garden, isn't it? Sometimes you see the crows coming in bulk. A group of them will come, 5-10 of them. They'll come and eat all the remnants of the food what they have thrown away, the rice or dal or whatever, sabjis or whatever. The crows find that very good. So they come and eat that. So every day he used to look at the crows and he used to identify them. This fellow has come yesterday. This fellow hasn't been there yesterday. He could look at them, because generally to differentiate between crows is very difficult, isn't it? It is very, very difficult to differentiate between one crow to another. All look the same color, the same type of looks, eyes, the way they move the heads, the beak, everything the same. So normally it's very difficult, but he could identify them. And the brahmanas realized that this personality is different. It's not that, that sushmatvam. Sushmatvam means that ability to see the very, very subtle side of things. He could see that from the birth itself. This was his nature. As a child, he used to do that. He grew up and he became a very great scholar. Eventually, the Shastriji came for argument and they presented this boy in the debate to argue against him. In that, that is a very detailed discussion. Whatever happened was, at the end, he was defeated. The Shastri, the scholar, was defeated. scholar was defeated. And this little boy, he got the recognition from the king. He got the recognition from the king. He grew up and he became such a great soul that eventually he went beyond the varnam and ashramam. In other words, those days, varnashramam was very strict. That means Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they performed their duties according to their varnam. When they cross over all the four varnas and the four ashramams, it is called Atyashrami, beyond the varnashrama system, or like an avadhuta state. So this personality, he became to that stage. He would not care for anything. Brahmanas are supposed to perform Sandhyavandanam, isn't it? Sandhyavandanam means, and the three sandhyas, morning, midday and evening, they are supposed to chant the Gayatri, offer the oblations to the sun god, and so many things which is related with their life, daily life. At some point, he gave up that also. That is all up to a particular stage in life for him. He gave up that also. So the Brahmanas, not realizing his full status or recognizing his status, they started avoiding him, thinking that he is a kind of a person who is fallen from the Brahminical nature. But for him, Brahminical nature and all has finished. That's all as far as the Varnashrama Dharma is concerned. But for a devotee who has realized Krishna, what Brahmana and what Kshatriya, nothing exists for him. So that is what was happening in his case. That when the sunset come, all the Brahmanas were going to perform Sandhyavandanam ceremony. Our man was not going to do that. He was asked, there was no sunrise or sunset in him. There was no sunrise or sunset in him. Why? Because there is no consciousness of the body at all. He is completely freed from the bodily concept of life. Apart from that, already the sun has risen in the heart. Sun has risen in the heart. And for him, the sunset is done already. The sunset has happened. Why? Ignorance has completely gone away. And the sunrise has already happened because the knowledge has come to him. Once the knowledge comes and the realization comes and the ignorance goes away, for such a person, what sunrise, what sunset, what Brahmana, what Kshatriya, all these things are only in that particular state of consciousness. When one is identifying with the body, thinking that I am a Brahmana, I am a Kshatriya, I am a Vaishya, I am a Shudra, he has to do all the activities related with that. But when one has crossed over the bodily concept of life and has completely situated in the pure spiritual platform of Krishna consciousness, there is no more duties to perform. That is what it is showing. There is no more duties to perform. So you can see the consciousness of a person who has advanced that level of spirituality, spiritual life, is no more bound by the loss of this world. Not even Varnashrama Dharma doesn't affect him. Varnashrama Dharma also does not affect him. Imagine that state of consciousness. That does happen to some great souls. It happens. In the history throughout, you will find there that 24 hours Krishna is inside, unable to forget him. And what can you do when from inside Krishna is shining like this, in such a way? When Krishna starts shining from inwards, from inside, and the person has so become internalized, inside, inward looking, and continuously seeing Krishna within the heart, for such a person, what obligation in this world? What kind of obligation has he got in this world? That he has even not that when Krishna has become taken over that position inside, he has forgotten about himself. Normally, we don't forget about ourselves, do we? We forget about everybody else in this world. But is there any time when we forget about ourselves? That never happens, isn't it? As soon as we wake up, we remember where we are, who we are. When we go to bed also, we know who we are. And even while sleeping also, to some degree, we are conscious who we are. But here, a situation comes to this this first-class devotee, that he forgets himself who he is. Because there is no more bodily identification. If Krishna is inside so much, so much inside, illuminating him inside, and that he sees only Krishna, nothing else at that time. Long ago, this incident happened. Swami Ramatirtha, probably some of you may have heard about him. He was a great personality. He came in the Ramanuja's tradition, if I understand correctly. and lived, spent a long time, but he had a householder life in his past. He became a very prominent personality in Krishna consciousness, later date. And after many, many years, his realizations were so high, that he could not, he started finding it difficult to identify people. One day his wife went back to him and asked him, "Do you remember me?" He says, "No, I don't remember you," he says to his wife. So such is the situation with these great personalities, because the perfect realization has come to them. And everything becomes spiritual. Self, the soul becomes the criteria. Where is the question of the material world? The other, see, for example, intelligence, memory, all these kind of things, this is in the brain. It has nothing to do with the soul. So, just like at the moment, we remember so many things. I am this, I live in this place, I belong to this country, I am so-and-so's husband, I am so-and-so's father, he is my she is my wife, this is my children, I am a citizen of this. Where is all this stored in the head, isn't it? It has nothing to do with the soul, it's not stored inside the heart, it is stored in the brain. So once you have moved away from the intellectual platform to the spiritual platform, all this memory is completely lost. You don't need any more gigs after that. All gigs finished. So purely spiritual consciousness inside, and therefore all the identification with the body in one lot wiped out. It goes away from that person. That is important point. Then, on the other hand, this is one state of consciousness of the pure, the first class devotee. Whereas for the second and the third class, how does he see? Everything different. He sees Krishna in the temple. He sees all the living entities in different species. All the 8.4 million different species he will recognize one to another. He can recognize without any problem. Because he is seeing that form of the body, the material body, and he will not forget that. And but once you leave that and only the spiritual relationship exists, then form doesn't matter anymore. What is normally happens is that when one's Krishna consciousness gets to such a high degree, eventually Krishna is going after Krishna. He is going after Krishna to such a degree, eventually Krishna swallows him. And he becomes, and inside him, the devotee is standing, Krishna is standing there in that devotee in fully illuminating the whole world. That's what it is. The devotee is standing there and Krishna is inside that devotee in full bloom, you can say. He is there in full bloom. That nothing exists, Krishna is standing there. It is such a powerful situation for that devotee. That examples are given there that the up to that point, the ignorance was there in the form of false ego. Now the false ego has completely gone from inside. So what will be remaining there? What remains there? There is nothing for him to identify with. Is there? Because the false ego is the one with which we all identify. Isn't it? I am this, I am that. All this identification is through the false ego. But once you lose the false ego, then there is nothing to identify with that. Then only the super soul, Krishna. So, Jiva, it is experiences. So many ways it is explained. When the river goes to the sea, up to that time river has its identity, isn't it? River has its identity. Similarly, also in a hill of sugar, there was one ant living there. This ant used to eat the sugar all the time and get drunk with the sugar. Ant doesn't require much of a sugar to get drunk. And it lived there for a long time. And another little further away, there was a small hill of salt. There were some ants living there also. So those ants in the salt hill, they were eating the salt. And this ant in the sugar hill, it was eating the sugar all the time. One day it so happened, one of the ants from the salt hill came to visit the ant in the sugar hill. So while coming, before coming, he had already eaten a lot of salt there. And when came here, this sugar ant gave to the salt ant told him that why don't you try this one a little bit? He said. The salt hand tried the sugar, but didn't have any effect. It was very bitter for him. He didn't have any taste for it. So this sugar hand says to him, did you eat something before you came here? He said, yes, I had a lot of salt before I came here, he said. The sugar hand says to him, that is why it is like that. As long as we have sense enjoyment, sense gratification, and attachment to sense gratification, bhakti won't be tasty. Krishna consciousness will not be very tasty. It will be a forced Krishna consciousness all the time, pushing ourselves to be in Krishna consciousness. Isn't it? That is that state of mind. It's just like the salt ant in the salt hill. Whereas, if you had cleaned your mouth completely and you had no salt, the taste of the salt inside, and if you had come and tasted the sugar, naturally you will find it tasty. The sweetness of the sugar will be experienced by yourself, anyone. Similarly, as long as we have the taste for sense gratification, bhakti and Krishna consciousness will not be very tasty for us. We will be struggling with it. So this is the difficulty. That is why vairagyam is necessary. Why vairagyam is stressed? Because of this reason. Two things won't go together, sense gratification and Krishna consciousness. Sense gratification, the more sense gratification goes away, Krishna consciousness will be much more enjoyable and relishable. Krishna consciousness is not a boring process that one has to struggle whole life with Krishna consciousness. If we have to struggle like this, it won't last very long. After some time the struggle will stop, we'll give it up. But Krishna consciousness is not meant for struggling. Krishna consciousness is Ahaituki apradihata yenalma samprasidadi. Srimad Bhagavatam says there, isn't it? Ahaituki apradihata. Apradihata, there is nothing, only we have to remove all these impurities in us. All the impurities have to be removed, that's all. That's all what is required. And then, yenalma samprasidadi. The soul will enjoy, show its pure nature. The soul will enjoy itself without any external sources. Without any external sources. That's why it is mentioned like that. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojida. What happens with Krishna consciousness? Bhakti Yoga Prayojida. Janayati Ashu Vairagyam. What will happen is, Vairagyam will come to that person. Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Jayata Haidugam. That also the required knowledge. What is necessary to sustain that Vairagyam and devotion will also come to him. So Bhagavatam stresses this point very strongly that that if you touch salt in the mouth and start chanting the japam, the holy name, you will find it very difficult to chant the holy name. If you take sugar and if you taste its sweetness, then you will also enjoy the holy name. The only reason for, if you are not enjoying Krishna consciousness and chanting the holy name, there is only one reason for that. The reason is that still there is a lot of desire for sense gratification. That is the simple answer to that. If one is not able to chant, still enjoy chanting the holy name of Krishna, the only reason for that is that Vishayavasana. Vishayavasana means desire for sense gratification is still inside. That hasn't gone. Therefore, then one who has taken to Krishna consciousness completely, Krishna doesn't leave him. And also, at least one should start in the Kanishtha Dhyari level. That is the Prakrata Bhakta, what we discussed, the undefined Bhakta. That's where everything begins. So, three kinds of categories we have discussed so far. The first one, who sees Krishna only in the deity. He is called Kanishtha Dhyari or Prakrata Bhakta. For him, Krishna exists only in the deity in the temple, nowhere else. The middle order one, the middle devotee, who is the Madhyama Bhakta, he sees, he has not seen Krishna everywhere yet. He sees Krishna's presence in the devotees, so he makes friendship with them. Premam. He develops premam, love towards Krishna only. But towards other devotees, he develops friendship, not premam. Not love, but friendship. There's a little difference there, isn't it? Love is only for Krishna. And friendship is for the other devotees. and kindness to other living entities, all other living entities, ignorant, innocent people, and indifference to all those who are krama maitri krava upeksha, to envious people who questions and argues and challenges. Such people he avoids them, indifference to them. That's that stage. So that's the middle one. And the top class devotee, sarva bhudeshu yapashil bhagavad bhavam atmana, he sees Krishna everywhere. Sarva bhudeshu yapashil, he sees bhagavad bhavam atmana, only sees Krishna in every living entity. All the living entities he sees Krishna, and in Krishna he sees all the living entities. Bhudani bhagavat yesham savai bhagavadottamah, he is the best one, he says. This is what Krishna likes, such a person. So, from these three types of categories, we can understand what devotees are, means, isn't it? It's easy to categorize. But we should not do one thing, after knowing these rules, go and start applying to everybody else and checking out which category is he, which category is that person. That is not the goal of this. This description is given here not to use it as a tool to measure others. It's only for our own understanding that this is what happens to a person, and understand from that how to live in this world, that these such things are important. So now what happens? Now we have discussed two devotees, isn't it? Kavi and Hari. Kavi and Hari. Hari has spoken about what? Hari spoke about the three kinds of devotees. Three kinds of devotees. And you've seen there that the Hari Maharshi, Hari Maharshi said there that the verse 51 in the second chapter, Ekadasha Skandam, 51 said, na yasya janma karmabhyam varnashrama na varnashrama jadibi sajjadesmin aham bhavo dehevai sahare priyaha. Then the mercy has coming to this person, who this pure devotee. How did it come? It came like this. The symptom of Krishna's mercy coming to him is that he has lost his bodily identity. That was the mercy. That is Krishna's mercy. Then, normally people have this identity that I am born in an aristocratic family, I have performed so many sacrifices. Or you can also say in the modern world, I was born in a very wealthy family, or born in a very educated family. These kind of things. Or I am born in a rich country, or whatever that is. So, in the olden days, it was Varnashrama Dharmam. So, they will identify with one of the Varnam and one of the Ashramam, like that. That all creates the consciousness that I consciousness develops from that. Yeah. So, therefore, somebody feels that he is higher and somebody is lower. These thoughts have come from that. This is all because he has not realized Krishna. Therefore, these thoughts are coming. But when he has realized Krishna and the bodily identification goes away, then all these false identities goes away, and therefore he is very dear to Krishna. He is very dear to Krishna. So, in other words, that who is placing to Krishna and whom does Krishna like? Realized souls. In other words, that's a simple answer. Those who are self-realized, they are the people, they are the devotees who is liked by Krishna. Then we saw in the next verse, na yasya swaha para idi vitteshu atmaniva abhidaha sarvabhuta samaha shandaha savai bhagavadottamaha. What is this nature we talked about? That na yasya swaha paraha idi vitteshu atmaniva abhidaha, that he does not think that all this wealth, what is in this world, is mine or yours. Everything is Krishna's. He does not see anything like that, mine and yours, in that way. And he is also kind to every living entity. Sarva bhuta samaha. That is also this kindness and pleasure and the nature to be pleasant to others is also Krishna's mercy. Earlier, if you recall, I think it was in the sixth canto, Sri Narayana Maharshi talks about a devotee's nature. Daya sarva bhudeshu സന്തുഷ്ടോ യേന കേന വാ സർവേന്ദ്രിയോപശാന്ത്യായ തുഷ്യതി ആശു ജനാർദ്ദന. വേ നരമാഷി സേസ് ദേർ ദയയാ സർവഭൂതേഷു സന്തുഷ്ടോ യേന കേന വാ. Always kind to other living entities. Unless you are a pure devotee, first class devotee, you can't be kind to others. This is the problem. Unless you are in that consciousness. That is why sometimes we try to be kind to others. The very next moment we get disgusted with the whole thing. And we have to stop it. The kindness to others. Because being kind to others means, unless your consciousness is also like that, it will not work. Artificially, if you try to do that, it will all end up in failure. It will end up in failure. That is why when we develop these etiquettes and all that, Vaishnava etiquettes and all that, if you theoretically study and start developing it, it may not work. Because the consciousness has not changed inside. It's only externally we are acting like that. Isn't it? So that is why it said like this, that when the consciousness has developed like that inside, these things doesn't require to be adjusted anymore. It will become like that. The behavior with others or dealings with others will naturally, when you come to the first class devotees platform, automatically our dealings with other people will also change. It doesn't require to be corrected at that time. So, daya sarvabhudeshu sandushto yena kenavam, and to be satisfied under all conditions, whether good things come, bad things come, that is also not an easy thing for an ordinary conditioned soul. But for some time you can try it out, and then you, in a day or two, it will all go. It will not last very long. It is the experience of, as far as many people have said like this, that how, then they will ask how to do it. So that question has no meaning. Because the consciousness inside has not become the pure devotee's consciousness. Till at that time, you have to deal with the world as it is. There's nothing you can do about it. Otherwise, everyone will exploit you. And they will utilize you for their advantage. And then they will quote the verses also to you. And tell you that this is what you have to do. But that is no use at the end. Sarvendriyova shandhyaja. That is what's important. That unless you have reached that level, artificially you should not try it. It will cause problems. It will be like the snake got beaten by the children. Same thing. So, sarvendriyova shandhyaja tushyati asho janardana. Krishna is not wanting us to artificially exhibit anything. Krishna is not explaining. He knows inside what is there, how much poison is inside. So whatever artificially you exhibit to others, Krishna will offer to us from inside. You are a snake inside and externally you are acting like a realized soul. That is not going to work. So here, in this particular, why we are studying all these things is to understand this and not to make it artificial. To make happen in a natural way. If it happens in a natural way, that is good. And that will only happen when Krishna's mercy comes. That's why it is said that Bhagavata Priyam, that it happens to him because of Nayasya Swaha Para Idi Viteshu Almani Vabhidaha Sarvabhuda Samaha. He only can see all living entities equally. Shandaha. He is always peaceful. Savai Bhagavata Ottamaha. That he is the best among the devotees, he says here. That so there are many, many things to happen before we start doing all these things, before we start practicing all these things. Many other things has to happen. When our vision has become like that, in a natural way, if it has become like that, that we start seeing all living entities equally, and we are totally peaceful inside, and we are seeing that all this creation belongs to Krishna. In that situation, if we act like this, if we do things, it will work properly. That's why it is said there, Savai Bhagavatama. Such a person would not have any problem. But artificially, if we do anything, it will not last very long. It will collapse in a day or two. So, now in three verses, Hari Maharshi is concluding the qualities of these great souls. Is concluding the qualities of these great souls. 53. Tribhuvana vipavaheda heda vepya kundha smriti rajidalma surad bhirvimargyad nachaladi bhagavalpada aravindam lavanmishardham abhi ya sa vaishnavagriyam. ത്രിഭുവന വിഭവ ഹേതവേപ്യകുണ്ഠ സ്മൃതിരചിതാത്മസുരാതിർവിമൃഗ്യാ ന ചലതി ഭഗവൽപദാരവിന്ദം ലവനിമിഷാർദ്ധം അപി യഹ സ വൈഷ്ണവാഗ്രഹ. ഇൻ ദിസ് വേഴ്സ് ഹൗ വിൽ ദാറ്റ് പേഴ്സൺ will react in this world in certain situations, what will be the kind of activities he will perform? If you tell him that we will make you in charge of all the three planetary systems, in other words, we'll give you the topmost position in this universe, and offer you in charge of all that, and provided if you can give up remembering Krishna for some time, if you can give up remembering Krishna for some time, if you are agreeing for that, we will offer you this position of the controller of the three universe, of the whole universe. But he will not be able to do that. He will reject that. Even three planetary systems, if you offer to him, he will not accept it, because he knows that even the demigods are after Krishna. They are also inquiring after Krishna. Demigods also have not got the control of their mind, that you have to remember. Therefore, they also do not understand the principle of Krishna consciousness. So, when such is the case, then they know very well that giving up Krishna consciousness and taking to the control of this whole creation is not worthwhile. That will be only cause more distress to them. This is their realization. That's how they see things. So, there in the Bhagavatam, while this is mentioned like this, is that the even a position of an exalted devotee is like that. He would not give up his Krishna consciousness for anything. He does not want to exchange with anything. If you remember, in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, this story is in the Padma Puranam. What happened was, when Parikshit Maharaj was ready to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and Sudeva Goswami was ready to speak Srimad Bhagavatam, the demigods came to visit him, to visit Sudeva Goswami. And they brought a whole pot of nectar with them, and they said to Sudeva Goswami, "Please don't give Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit. Take this nectar and give us Srimad Bhagavatam instead of giving to Parikshit Maharaj." At that time in Padma Puranam it says like this, that when Sudeva Goswami saw the demigods who had come with the nectar, he looked at them and smiled. Why did he smile? The reason for the smile was this. He thought, these demigods are really selfish. Look at their swarthada. Swartha means a selfishness. That even now they want to do business with me. Like us, not much different, isn't it? Demigods are nothing but a higher representation of us. We will do business everywhere possible. Even with Krishna, if we can do it, we'll do it. That is the type of people they are. Only thing is, they have a lot more money than us to buy. We are poor compared to them. So they thought, we'll bring this nectar. Because Bhagavatam means what? Krishna. Bhakti, isn't it? That is Bhagavatam. So demigods thought, let's get Krishna in an easy way rather than going through the Krishna consciousness way. They also want Krishna consciousness because they also know the value of it. But because they don't want to put the effort for that, they want to do business with Krishna, they thought Sudeva Goswami has got Krishna. So let's get Krishna out of him and we will tempt him. Instead of giving a bottle, he gave this, that's all. In the material world, what do? We get a bottle from the wine shop and take it, isn't it, to please somebody. That's what the Karmis do always. So here, the demigods came with another pot of nectar. And Sudeva Goswami smiled at them. He didn't say one word. He didn't say one word to them. He just shook his head. "No, not for you. You can go back," he said to them. "Bhagavatam, not for you." Why? Because first thing, the swartha buddhi, the selfishness in that business nature. One who wants to do business, he should not do business with Krishna. You will lose it at the end, everything. That will be big loser. So that's why, though Srimad Bhagavatam is for those who has given up these desires in the heart. That's why it is Bhagavatam is given the special position, isn't it? If you remember, Pibada Bhagavadam Rasamalayam Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhaugaham. That keep bringing this nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam, but one has to become purified to drink that nectar as much as he likes. So therefore, it is said there that the second reason why he said was that if you drink this nectar, what the demigods have brought, you are not going to live eternally. All you can do is, you will have a very long span of life like the demigods, because they drink this nectar and that's why they live long in the heavenly planets. Indra and all others, they live in the heavenly planets for a much longer period compared to us. Isn't it? You know the calculations that 6 months here is one day there. And so their lifespan is also a lot more longer than us. So, you get a much longer life with the nectar, if you drink nectar. But if you drink Srimad Bhagavatam, it's once for all finished, it's eternal then. Isn't it? The result is eternity. That is Srimad Bhagavatam if it is drunk properly. So, Sukadeva Goswami felt that they were trying to cheat him, the demigods. They wanted to offer something cheap and get something better than that. So that is the normal businessman's mood, isn't it? He wants to offer something cheap and get something better than that from them. He wants to rip off the customer, in other words. So that's what they were trying to do. So when Sukadeva Goswami saw that, immediately he smiled, seeing that he could see through them, their mind very well, and seeing their greed to get Srimad Bhagavatam. And he said to them, "You're not qualified." Why they are not qualified? Because the heart is not pure enough. Why? These demigods have got there also. How? How did they get there? By performing sacrifices and the results they are enjoying there in the heavenly planets. They also had performed a lot of pious activities. In other words, the desire for results has not gone away from them yet. Desire for results has not gone away from them yet. So therefore, Sudeva Goswami's point is, you are also not qualified to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. You are not qualified to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. When we come and sit in front of Srimad Bhagavatam, the first thing we have to recognize is how good is our consciousness to hear Bhagavatam. That we should look inwards. Am I qualified enough to hear Bhagavatam? Because in many instances, we have so much anatta. That's why Krishna says there, Yatha yadhalma parimarjyadeso malpunya ghada sharvanabhidanehi tatha tatha vashyadi vastu sushmam chakshuddhi vayanjana samprayuktam. In Bhagavatam you can see that later. Krishna says, Yatha yadhalma parimarjyadeso, as long as you keep on hearing Srimad Bhagavatam continuously throughout lifetime, Yatha yadhalma parimarjyadeso, then malpunya ghada sharvanabhidanehi. If you are constantly hearing about me, my punya ghada, my glorious pastimes and my associate and my devotees, me and my devotees, mal punya ghada shravana abhidanehi, then what will happen? Tatha tatha pashyadi vastu sushmam. The result will be, you will become more and more subtle in your outlook, in your thinking. Tatha tatha pashyadi, you will start seeing vastu sushmam. Sushma means much more finer and subtle. The subtle realizations will start coming. What is that subtle realization? Realization of the self, of the soul. It will happen. Krishna says there later on in the Ekadasham. Tatha tatha pashyadi vastu sushmam. How? Chakshuddhi vai anjana samprayuntam. Just like when in the previous time, now we have operations for cataract, isn't it? When you have cataract, there's operation. But long ago, in the Ayurvedic system, there was no cataract operations. They used to have a system of treatment whereby they used to rub certain ointment on the eye and it used to wipe away the blurred vision by wiping and purify and clear the eyes, and that was the system they followed. Krishna says similarly, as much as you hear about Krishna from Bhagavatam, that will also happen to us and we will start seeing Krishna is inside us and the soul, the spiritual identity will come back to us. There is no other way it can happen. That is the conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in that verses, so here in this verse it is said like this, that is why this verse is important. Tribhuvana vibhava hedave akunda സ്മൃതിരചിതാത്മസുരാതിർവിമർഗ്യാത് നലതി ഭഗവൽപദാരവിന്ദാൽ ലവനിമിഷാർത്ഥം അഭിയസ വൈഷ്ണവാഗ്രഹം. ഇവൻ ഫോർ എ സെക്കൻഡ് യു കനോട്ട് ലവനിമിഷാർത്ഥം യു കനോട്ട് ടേക്ക് ഹിസ് മൈൻഡ് അവേ ഫ്രം കൃഷ്ണ. ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് ദി കൺക്ലൂഷൻ. യസ വൈഷ്ണവാഗ്രഹം. ഹി ഈസ് ദി ബെസ്റ്റ് അമംഗ് ദി devotees. It says, he is the best among the devotees. Now, next verse. Bhagavata uru vikramangri shakham nakhamani chandrigaya nirastadave hridigadam upasidadam hunasam prabhavadi chandra ivodide akadavam. Bhagavata uru vikramangri shakham nakhamani chandrigaya nirastadave hridigadam upasidadam hunasam പ്രഭവതി ചന്ദ്രമിവോദിതേ അർക്കദാവാം. ദെൻ ഈവൻ ഇഫ് യു സെർവ് കൃഷ്ണ കണ്ടിന്യൂസ്ലി, ഇഫ് ദർ ഈസ് സ്റ്റിൽ പോസിബിലിറ്റി ദാറ്റ് ഇഫ് ദർ ഈസ് സ്റ്റിൽ സം ട്രേസ് ഓഫ് രജോഗുണം ഇൻസൈഡ് ആൻഡ് ദർ ക്യാൻ സ്റ്റിൽ ക്രിയേറ്റ് ഡിസ്ട്രെസ് ഇൻസൈഡ് ഓർ ദർ ഈസ് എ പോസിബിലിറ്റി ദാറ്റ് ഡിസയർ ഫോർ സെൻസ് എൻജോയ്മെന്റ് ക്യാൻ കം ബാക്ക് ബട്ട് ഇറ്റ് വിൽ നോട്ട് ഹാപ്പൻ. ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് വാട്ട് ഇറ്റ് സെയിങ്. That and there's a possibility of falling down, but it will not happen, because once the moon has risen and there is no more darkness inside, it is compared like this. Nakhamani chandrigaya nirastadave, that all the ragam and dvesham, attachment and all the other lust, anger, greed, all those kinds of impurities inside the mind, they have all been cleaned up already by the moonshine that is coming from Krishna's lotus feet, from the different on the on the different nails. It is compared to the moon has broken into pieces. One devotee said to Krishna, when I looked at your lotus feet, I find 10 moons is there, 10 moons at your lotus feet, all broken, less like a huge moon. If you break it into pieces and put it all over Krishna's feet, it appeared to him like that. So, and that moonshine will remove all the impurities inside the heart. Then, normally, first one remembers Krishna, and in due course of time, with intense devotion, all material desires goes away, and Krishna's mercy comes to him. And similarly, when moonshine comes to him, all the heat, what he was experiencing in the sunshine, also goes away. And the body becomes much more comfortable with that. It is the same thing happens to him. Similarly, inside our internal, subtle body, which was also going through very difficult problems due to the internal impurities, that will also be taken out. All the impurities will be taken out and the mind will become peaceful. At that point in time, is the time when the Shastram has to be instructed to him by the spiritual master. And that will have total faith in him. Otherwise, the faith may not develop properly. Only when one is developing this kind of consciousness, and at that stage when one is instructed properly in the Shastram will have its effect. And when that thoughts becomes very powerful, that it alleviates all kinds of material existence in him. Bhagavata uru vikramangri shakha nakhamani chandrigaya nirastadave hridigada upasidadam punasa prabhavadi chandramivodide arkadavam. That is what will happen. And then Kahiri Maharshi is concluding his discussion with Nimi Maharaj. How is he concluding? He is saying here, visrajani hridayam nayasya sakshal hariravashabhidopyakaukhanasham പ്രണയരശനയാദൃതാംഗ്രിവത്മം സഭവതി ഭാഗവത പ്രധാന ഉക്താഹം. വിസൃജതി ഹൃദയം നയസ്യ സാക്ഷാൽ ഹരിരവി അവശാവിഹിതോപ്യഘൗഘനാശ പ്രണയരശനയാദൃതാംഗ്രിവത്മം സഭവതി ഭാഗവത പ്രധാന ഉക്താഹം. ഇഫ് യു ലുക്ക് ഇൻ ടു എ പ്രീവിയസ് വേഴ്സ് വിച്ച് വാസ് വേഴ്സ് നമ്പർ, ദർ വാസ് എ ക്വസ്റ്റ്യൻ ഫ്രം ദ കിങ്. വാട്ട് ഇസ് ദ കിങ്? ദ വേഴ്സ് നമ്പർ വാസ് 44 words, the king asked one question. What was the question? Adha bhagavadam bhruda yad dharmo yadrusho nrnam യഥാചരതിയൽ ബ്രൂദേ ഏർലിംഗേർ ഭഗവത് പ്രയാഹ. ദ ക്വസ്റ്റ്യൻ വാസ് യദ്ധർമ്മോ യാദൃശോ നൃണാം യഥാചരതിയൽ ബ്രൂദേ. ദ്രൂദേ, ഹൗ ഡസ് ഹി സ്പീക്? ദിസ് വാസ് ദ ക്വസ്റ്റ്യൻ. യൽ ബ്രൂദേ, ദി ആൻസർ ടു ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് ദിസ് വേഴ്സ്, ദിസ് വേഴ്സ് 55. വിസൃജതി ഹൃദയം അയസ്യ സാക്ഷാൽ ഹരിരവശാവിഹിതോപ്യഘൗഘനാശ പ്രണയശനയാ ധൃതാംഗ്രിപത്മം സ ഭഗവതി ഭാഗവത പ്രധാന ഉക്താഹം. ദാറ്റ് വട്ട് എവർ ഹി സ്പീക്സ്, ഹി വിൽ ഓൺലി സ്പീക് വൺ തിങ്, വാട്ട് ഈസ് ദാറ്റ്? കൃഷ്ണസ് ഹോളി നെയ്ം. ഹി വിൽ നോട്ട് സേ എനിത്തിങ് എൽസ്. ഹി ഹാസ് നത്തിങ് ടു സേ ഇൻ ദിസ് വേൾഡ്. ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് ദി സ്റ്റേറ്റ് ഓഫ് കോൺഷ്യസ്നെസ്. സോ ഇഫ് യു ലൈക്ക് അർജുന ആസ്ക്ഡ് കൃഷ്ണ, ഹൗ ഡസ് എ ഡിവോട്ടി സ്പീക്, ഹൗ ഡസ് എ പേഴ്സൺ സ്പീക് വെൻ ഹി ഈസ് സെൽഫ് റിയലൈസ്, ഇത് പ്രജ്ഞ, വെൻ ഹിസ് മൈൻഡ് ഈസ് സ്റ്റഡി, ഇസ്ന്റ് ഇറ്റ്? Have you noticed one interesting thing? Krishna did not answer any of those questions in Bhagavad Gita. That is the way. Vedic system is like that. You don't answer any question directly. Because if you answer, it won't have any benefit. By answering that question, doesn't mean anything. Arjuna's question was from a mundane level. He was asking that question because he was thinking, still thinking he is the body. That's why he is asking that question. Once you have realized, you won't ask such a question. So you will notice this all the time. In Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find different people are asking different questions, but no answer is forthcoming. There is no point in answering those questions, because in order to tell us that the way we have to learn also how to ask questions, first of all, it's not that we ask questions, whatever that comes to the mind straight away, throw it out and get an answer for that. Now tell me what's the answer. That's not how you ask questions and the spiritual life is concerned. Spiritual life with realizations and with deeper understanding, when things are progressing, you will see a lot of things get cleared up on its own. Because there is no realization, you have to keep asking questions all the time. And it ends up only waste of time, because the answer is not going to satisfy you anyway. Because you are not experiencing it, you will still think it is some kind of hodgepodge, or some answer given to me to keep me shut up or to keep my mouth shut. So this question answer has only valid in the Vedic system. Vedic culture is like that. There is no answer will be given. You stay and you practice it, and then you will see the answers coming out. Answer from where it has to come. It has to come from inside, not from outside. Physics and chemistry you can study, and then after that you can write all questions you want, and your professor or lecturer, he will clarify all your questions in the end, isn't it? So, but when you study spiritual life, spirituality, when that develops inside, what happens to a person is he gives up questioning things and he starts thinking, actually, rather than questioning. And when he starts thinking, in that process he becomes very much internal. And in that internalization means an attachment with the external world goes away and deeper realizations start developing. That's the only way you can find answer to all your questions in the spiritual life. Not otherwise. That's why when Krishna, Arjuna was asking, how does a devotee eat? How does he walk? How does he pralaban, prasajan, grihanan? So many says he is there. How does he walk? What speed he walks? All these kind of things Arjuna was asking. Krishna didn't answer one question there. Not one. Same thing here also. You can see here that he is asking a devotee who has come to this stage, how does he speak? That's also a meaningless question. Because he doesn't have much to speak except Krishna. Isn't it? So that's why he said in one nice verse, Sabhavadi Bhagavada Pradhana Uktaha. He will only say one thing, Krishna, 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 Krishna. Nothing else for him to say. What is there to say in this world? That is his position. His realization has gone to such a degree that he does not want to talk mundane topics like us. He is not concerned who is winning the premiership or who is making money in the stock market. If a pure first-class devotee start talking like this, then what is he? Is he a first-class devotee then? He's not first-class devotee anymore. First-class devotee's consciousness is such that we don't have to go very deeply. Once the consciousness changes, then all these things will naturally change. That's why it's said there, Visrajati hridayam nayasya swakshal hariravashabihito pyakhauganashah pranayarashanaya drudhangribatmam sabhavadi bhagavada pradhana uktah. That what happens to him is Hari, Krishna, is residing inside. The result was all akhauhanasham, all sinful reactions have gone away from inside. Therefore, there is nothing more inside left to talk about. When we talk too much, what it means is a lot inside. That is why this talking goes on in this world. pranayrashanayadrudangri vatmam, that his attachment to Krishna is so strong, the bondage is so high, sabhavadi bhagavada pradhana voktaha. He is only chanting one thing, the holy name, Krishna's holy name, nothing else to speak for him. So that question there, yel brode, he asked, this is the answer for that. What question he asked here in the earlier verse, in the verse 44, yadhacharadi yel brode, what does he speak? The answer is here. He only talks, chants the holy name, that's all, nothing else he does. That's the answer. Then, earlier, he also, you can see there, yadharmo yadrusho nranam, yadharmo yadrusho nranam, he asked a question there, that how does he behave in this world? Yadharmo yadrusho nranam, that, in the same verse, if you will see, verse number 44. Adha Bhagavadam Brodha. Tell me Srimad Bhagavadam, he says. Yad dharmo yadrusho nanam. That, what kind of dharmam he has got? What is his activities in other words? Isn't it? That was the question. Yad dharmo yadrusho nanam. And among human society, how does he perform his dharmam? This was the question. In other words, the question from the king, Nimi, was exactly like Arjuna. King Nimi was also asking that how does he conduct his business in this world? Isn't it? That's the same question. How does he conduct himself in this world, his business? That answer was given in the verse number 53 and 54. Because he has no business to perform anymore. That's his business. That's his business. Only if you have business to do in this world, you have to worry about all that. But when you have no business to do in this world, what's the point in discussing about it? His business is only to these two things, verse 53 and verse 54. That's his business. That's why they are important verses. You see, when we look at people and we start judging them based on our understanding, we require some guidelines in that. Otherwise, it's very hard to know what is a pure devotee status, isn't it? Who is a first class devotee? Through these discussions in the Bhagavadam, Hari Maharshi is giving us a very clear understanding of a first-class devotee, or a middle-class devotee, or a Prakrita Kanishta Adhikari. So what we should do, look at these verses and see where we fit in. That's the best thing to do. That, is it one or two or three, gold, silver or bronze, which one it is, we are. Perhaps if you fit in with the bronze, we should consider we are lucky about that, isn't it? You can see how difficult it is. Krishna consciousness is not a cheap thing. Lifetime after lifetime, great devotees endeavor to become Krishna conscious, to fight against their own vasanas and the karmam. And that's where they get to that stage. So what is important is that with this verses, Krishna has spoken that that this devotee, his nature is such that even when he gets sick or falls into extreme distress and things like that, he'll physically he may appear very helpless, but even at that time he will chant the holy name. That is his capability. Normally people cannot chant the holy name when they are in distress, isn't it? Then they start looking for remedy at that time. But a devotee like him, he will always chant the holy name even while experiencing distress. That whatever kind of distress comes to him or happiness comes to him, he will not be affected by that. The holy name will be on his tongue all the time. And he has tied himself to Krishna so strongly that Krishna has been tied with him also in the same way. Therefore, Krishna's lotus feet will always stay in his mind. And remembering Krishna's lotus feet and chanting the holy name, and this is the only activity he performed. And such devotees are very, very rare. Very, very rare. So only those who are completely relieved from sense gratification can come to that stage. This is how pure devotees, first-class devotees' symptoms were explained by Hari Maharshi. Now, out of the nine sages, we have talked about two, Kavi and Hari, isn't it? Kavi is the person who spoke about Bhagavata Dharma. Hari is the sage who spoke about the symptoms of devotees. Now, after this, the next person comes. He, his name is Antariksha. Antariksha. You see, all the names also have got very significant meaning. That's very interesting because Vedavyasa Maharshi gave these names to them for whatever reasons, I don't know. But all the names also seems to represent the point they are discussing with King Nimi. Like for example, when Kavi Maharshi discussed, Kavi means Krantadarshi. Krantadarshi means one who can see things very deep into the problems of life. Remember, when we asked why people experience fear in this material world, Kavi Maharshi answered that, isn't it? Identification with the body and how the identification and the fear that has developed from that and where it originated, how it developed eventually into duality and fear, all that Kavi Maharshi spoke about that. That shows his sharpness of the vision, sharpness in his vision. So that was Kavi. Now when it came, that was the first question. The word itself, Kavi Maharshi, Kavi means one who has got that kind of vision. Krantadarshi, he is called. Krantadarshi Kavihi, it says in the Shastram. Then the second question was, Hari Maharshi. He is Hari, everywhere, Hari, Hari, Hari. Nothing else, except Hari, nothing else for him. So therefore, when he wanted to talk about the first class devotee, Hari Maharshi himself was the best example. He is himself, is that category. So he was able to speak in that way and say to, he was experiencing that, so he was able to say this to King Nimi. Now we are talking about the third person. The question here is, what is Maya? That's a good question, isn't it? What is Maya? And it is the most difficult question to answer also. What is Maya? What is Maya? It is so difficult to answer that question that different acharyas have spoken in different ways about it, about Maya. Maya's role in this world is very, very hard to find out. The word Antariksham means, Ikshanam means to look. Antarikshanam means one who looks inwards. One who looks inwards. That is the word Antariksham means. Antariksham means one who looks inwards. So exactly that is what is required to know about Maya, to look inwards. Otherwise you won't know it. One whose vision is always outwardly, external, he will never see Maya anywhere. He will see everywhere extremely blissful state. So Maya is not easily noted, is not easily understood. I'll give you an example. Probably it may be easier to understand Maya through examples. That is how it's always spoken. It's never defined. Why? Anirvachaniya Maya, it says. It cannot be defined. But through examples, karyam, or the effect, by studying the effect, you can know the reason, karanam. The reason can be known. So it is from that point of view, it is spoken here, that the result is that you experience Maya. You experience Maya in this world. By knowing the result, you can know that Maya exists. Maya exists. So, there is a statement about that in the Sahasranama, in Thousand Names. It says there, Behirmukha samaradhya, andarmukha sudhurlabha, andarmukha samaradhya, behirmukha sudhurlabha. It is in the Lila Sahasranama, there is a statement like this. Maya is considered to be Lalita Devi. Not Lalita and Vishakha, but Lalita Shri Parvati is another energy. It's energy of Krishna. Krishna's energy. So this energy, there is Lalita Devi is referred, Sri Parvati is also called as Lalita Devi. There is 1,000 names related to for worshipping her. In there, this statement comes, Andarmukha samaradhya bahirmukha sudhurlabhaha. One who looks inwards, he will see her and worship her. One who looks outwards, he will never find her anywhere. He will always be confused in her presence. He will always be confused in her presence. He will know what to say about it. Andarmukha samaradhya bihirmukha sudurlabhaha. Andarmukha samaradhya bihirmukha sudurlabhaha. Andarmukha, one who is looking inwards, he will be able to know. Therefore, Andarikshan name is used there. Andarmukha samaradhya. It is also said that you may be able to realize Brahman. You may be able to understand Brahman. Maya, you will never be able to understand. Never be able. That is the power of Maya. See, Maya is such a powerful thing. If you remember, when Krishna appeared in this world, what did he say to Yogamaya? First go there and make arrangements for me to come. Isn't it? Even Lord Balaram got shaken by Maya. That is how powerful she is. When Balaram was taken from Devaki Devi's womb to Rohini's womb, it was transferred, isn't it? That was the instruction given to Yogamaya. Move Balaram from Devaki's womb to Rohini's womb. And also Krishna says to Yogamaya Devi that Balaram should not know about this, what's happening. And what did Yogamaya Devi say to Krishna at that time? Omidi tathedi, it will be done. No worry about it, she says. Who can say this? And even Balaram didn't know. Balaram was thinking, how did I end up here? I was supposed to be taking birth from Devaki Devi, and now I'm taking birth from Rohini Devi. Even Balaram didn't know first time. That is Yogamaya, Maya's energy. Maya is such a powerful thing. And Prabhupada used to say once that he said, this is particularly referring, talking to the devotees in the West, he said, the main problem with you is that you are not frightened of Maya, he said to them. He said, you are not frightened of Maya. That's why your mind is going like this all over. Do you want to do this, want to do that? So many different ideas coming to you. Why? Because you are not frightened of Maya. If you are frightened of Maya, you won't act like this. That's what he was saying. So anyway, it's for everybody, not only for the devotees. All of us actually falls into that category. That's why we are doing all kinds of things. But when the fear of Maya comes, or if you are frightful of Maya, then we won't do things in the wrong way. We won't do things in the wrong way. We'll be always conscious of that Maya is there. And it is the effect of Maya that I'm doing things in the wrong way. That fear will come. But when there is no fear of Maya, we will act in the wrong direction, and she will eventually catch up with us and get us into the net. Somewhere we'll fall down and we will get caught up in that. We may think, though, I'm making a lot of advancement in spiritual life, this, that and the other. But at the end, when you get, suddenly the drop comes, then you will think, oh, what has happened? You'll open the eyes at that time. So anyway, here, Andharmuga Samaradhyam, Bahirmuga Sudurlabham. So, even you may be able to realize Brahman. Brahman realization, it is possible. Many people can do it. But Maya realization, never possible. Impossible to do the realize Maya. So, in order to understand Maya, let us look at one or two stories. Because, as I said before, Maya cannot be explained otherwise. Only through... there are three examples in the... In Bhagavadam and Yoga Vasishtam. In Bhagavadam, the best example is Markandeya Maharshi. If you know the story of Markandeya, we have talked about, I think, before, Markandeya story. Markandeya, all these great sages, although they are very thoughtful, and a stage come in their spiritual life that they start desiring to see Maya. It comes to them. We don't get that desire because we don't even know what Maya is. So there's no desire like that. But sages like Markandeya, Narada Maharshi, and so many others got this desire to see Maya. So, Gadi also. So the story in Bhagavadam, in the 12th canto, Markandeya Maharshi went to perform his penances in Himalayas. In Pushpabhadra river bank, he sat there and he was performing very intense meditation. When he performed meditation for a long time, he was young, Indra started getting worried that, is he after my position? Indra started thinking like that. So what did Indra do? Indra has certain weapons with him, isn't it? To disturb the mind of those who are trying to advance spiritually. The Malayamaridan, that is the beautiful wind, cool wind, which is full of good flavor. And also, when it comes and touches the body, you feel very, very agitated in the mind. And the beautiful damsels from the heavenly planets, Urvashi, Rambha, Tilottama, and so on and so forth, Menaka, all of them. And music, and all these things accompanied with them, they come and they start dancing in front of you. They did all that, and Markandeya Maharshi did not get affected by that. His control on the mind was so strong that nothing could move him, touch him. Nothing could touch him. Imagine that that Indra had sent his best army to make Markandeya to fall. That was his goal. That's why he sent all of them. They came there, they started singing, dancing and playing music, everything they did. Nothing was changing. Markandeya was still absorbed in his meditation. Nothing was disturbing him. So, at that time, Markandeya Maharshi's mind was so absorbed and so fixed up in spiritually that the girls who came there, they started getting worried. They started thinking, suppose if this sage opens his eyes and he says something, maybe we will lose our life itself, we'll be finished here. So they tried a lot and then they went back. All these things were observed by Narayana Maharshi from a little distance. Because they are all in the Vyasashramam, Narayanashramam, all are next to each other. Markandeya Maharshi's ashramam, they are all next to each other. So Narayana Maharshi was observing all these things, what was happening. So Narayana Maharshi came up to Markandeya Maharshi after this incident. And Narayana Maharshi came up to him to congratulate him that he did not fall for the techniques of provocations from Indra. So when Narayana Maharshi arrived, Narayana Maharshi is Krishna himself, isn't it? When he came there, Markandeya Maharshi opened his eyes and saw Narayana Maharshi standing there. At that point, Narayana Maharshi congratulates him, congratulates Markandeya Maharshi and says to him, "You are a good boy, you have done very well," he said to Markandeya. Markandeya says to him, "What have I done?" He says, "You did not fall for Indra's techniques of trying, you still stood firm, and I like that very much," he said. That Markandeya Maharshi's strength of that strength of austerities and penances impressed Narayana Maharshi very much. So Narayana Maharshi said like this to him, "Tam chainam bhakti yogam dradeidu maime sadhyam arogyam ayuhu." Markandeya wanted all these things and Krishna has given them in abundance, everything. Health, long lifetime, long lifespan and capacity to perform penances. Tam chainam bhakti yogam dradeidu maime sadhyam arogyam ayuhu. All these were given to Markandeya freely and Markandeya succeeded in his mission. When Narayana Maharshi came and told Markandeya these things, Markandeya asked Narayana Maharshi that when Narayana Maharshi told him that you did not fall into Maya, he said. At that time Markandeya wanted to see Maya. Markandeya says to Narayana Maharshi, "What is this thing called Maya?" he says. "I have not seen this before." At that time Markandeya Maharshi smiled at him and told him, "You can see Maya, but not now. When the time is right, you will have a darshan of Maya," he says to him. Markandeya Maharshi said like, Narayana Maharshi says to Markandeya. Markandeya, what he did, he sat there and in his meditations, but before he knew, what happened was, he started realizing the whole place is flooded. Whole Himalayas is flooded, Everest is gone underwater, everything underneath the water. This Pushpaputra river is flooded, the whole ashram is underwater, everything is underwater. Just like, you know, when they apply anesthetic, how you go off, in a second the whole thing has gone off for Markandeya. Markandeya started experiencing, what all he experienced? He experienced, he's taking birth, and then he is swimming in the water. He is swimming, constantly. While swimming, he gets married on the process. While swimming, he is getting married. And while getting married, he has got children in that, after the marriage. And they are all swimming together in the water. He is swimming. And Markandeya Maharshi could not understand anything. He is completely absorbed in that. Nothing has changed him. He is completely absorbed in that. He went on and on and on. And drinking also water, and he is swimming, still swimming. He is taking birth, he is dying, he is taking birth again, and he is still swimming. So, in the water everywhere, Ushpabhadra river flooded, all the Himalayas flooded, Everest also underneath the water. And Markandeya Maharshi is above all this, still swimming. And he went on and on for a long, long period of time. Markandeya Maharshi didn't know what was going on. Eventually, he sees Krishna lying in a banyan leaf. He didn't know who it was. A little baby, like that is that famous form of Krishna in the banyan leaf form. Lying in the banyan leaf. Taking the toe from the left foot and putting it into the mouth and biting that. That form of Krishna. കരാരവിന്ദേന പദാരവിന്ദം മുഖാരവിന്ദേ വിനിവേശയന്തം വടസ്യ പത്രസ്യ പടേശയാനം ബാലം മുകുന്ദം മനസാസ്മരാമി സെയ്സ് വിലുമംഗലം അബൌട്ട് ദാറ്റ്. വിലുമംഗലം സെയ്സ് കരാരവിന്ദേന പദാരവിന്ദം വിത്ത് ബോത്ത് ദി ഹാൻഡ്സ് കൃഷ്ണ ഈസ് ഹോൾഡിംഗ് ദിസ് ടോ ഓൺ ദി ലെഫ്റ്റ് ഹാൻഡ് ആൻഡ് ബ്രോട്ട് ഇറ്റ് ക്ലോസർ ടു ദി മൗത്ത്. യു നോ ഹൗ ദി ചിൽഡ്രൻ ആർ, ദേ ലൈക് ടു ഗെറ്റ് എനിത്തിങ് ഇൻ ടു ദി മൗത്ത്. പദാരവിന്ദം മുഖാരവിന്ദേ വിനിവേശയന്തം, ഹി ബ്രോട്ട് ഇറ്റ് ടു ദി ഫേസ് ആൻഡ് ബ്രോട്ട് ഇറ്റ് ഇൻ ടു ദി ലിപ്സ്. വടസ്യ പത്രസ്യ പടേശയാനം, then he is lying down in the banyan leaf, he is lying there. Balam Mugundam Manasasmarami, then Mugunda Balan, then Mugunda Krishna, I pay my obeisances, says Vilumangalam. So that form appeared in front of Markandeya. Markandeya started seeing this form of the baby. So all this time Markandeya started seeing there was nobody in the water. All this birth, death and all has happened many times and Markandeya couldn't see anything, any living entity anywhere. Then he saw this baby in the leaf lying there. As soon as he saw the baby, he thought, oh, this baby is very nice, let me have the baby in my hand. He started swimming towards the baby. He wanted to take the baby in the hand. Meanwhile, in one breath, Markandeya went inside Krishna's one nostril. He went inside the stomach. Inside, Krishna's inside. When he went inside, he saw all universes inside, in Krishna's belly. He saw all the universes there. In the next breath, he came out through the other nostril, outside, and he was still swimming. He's still swimming. Swimming is not over. So, like this, it went on for quite some time. Ultimately, Markandeya realized that it is better not to look the inside and outside of this person. This is a very special baby. I'm going in, I'm coming out. I'm going in, I'm coming out. Where this is going to end, he was saying. So in the Bhagavad Gita, we can see in the 12th canto all these things. So at that point, suddenly, Narayana Maharshi put the brake. As soon as he put the brake, Markandeya Maharshi looked, he's sitting there as he was before, under Pushpadra River, and he's realized, what was I experiencing all this time? That's what was going through Markandeya Maharshi's head. And when he turned and looked, a few yards away, Narayana Maharshi is standing there and smiling at him. A meaningful smile. He didn't have to say anything. Have you experienced Maya or not? That was that meaning, word meaning of that smile. Narayana Maharshi's smile was like that to Markandeya. So Markandeya Maharshi's desire to see Maya was fulfilled by Narayana Maharshi in that way. Was fulfilled by Narayana Maharshi in that way. That is, with that, Markandeya said, I don't want to see Maya anymore. I had seen enough Maya. So Maya is such a thing, nobody can define it. What is Maya? And it is this Maya, if you remember in the creation process, we have discussed this. What is Maya? The three modes of nature is coming from Maya. Isn't it? Maya is nothing but Mula Prakriti. Krishna's beginning itself, in the Bhagavadam, if you remember, what did Vedavyasa Maharshi see? Vedavyasa Maharshi saw Krishna first time. And what else did he see? He saw Mayadevi standing next to him in service to Krishna. So, in the first canto itself, Vedavya says this, isn't it? That he saw Mayadevi standing there in service to Krishna. In service to Krishna. So that is how close that relationship is between Maya and Krishna. So, nobody can easily escape from that. Therefore, Krishna puts it categorically in the Bhagavad Gita, Devihyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratyaya. Don't try to. If you try to fight against Maya, you will lose it. You're not going to win. It's an absolute thing. That nobody has won so far over Maya. Therefore, Krishna says, Mam Evayam Prabhadyande. You take my shelter, then Maya Edam Tarandivi. Then you may be able to cross the Maya. He says, that's how Maya is spoken about in the Bhagavad Gita. So, from this example in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you can see that personalities like Markandeya Maharshi found it difficult to cope with Maya, to handle Maya. So also, that is why this question came up from King Nimi to Andariksha. What is Maya? Same inquisitiveness to know what is Maya. Like Markandeya wanted to see what is Maya. But here, Andariksha didn't give him an experience of Maya. Rather, he discussed Maya. What is Maya? Through Karyam. Karyam means the effects of Maya. In the Yoga Vasishtam, the story is like this. The story of Maya is like this. It's much more interesting. there was Gandhi. Gandhi was a powerful sage. Powerful sage was Gandhi. Gandhi goes to Ganga River, stands in Ganga River, and inside the, in the water right up to the neck, he stands there and he performs his penances. Standing in the cold water in Ganga River, he performs his penances. And he is meditating on Krishna's form. He is meditating on Vishnu form actually. He is performing meditation on Vishnu's form. So while meditating on Vishnu's form, after long and intense meditation, Vishnu appeared in front of him and asked Gandhi, what do you want from me? He says. Gandhi says to him, I want to see Maya, he says. Gandhi says to Vishnu, I want to see Maya. So Vishnu says to Gandhi, what were you seeing all this time then, in this life? What have you seen then? Was it not Maya, he says. Gandhi says, no, that's not Maya for me. I still want to see Maya as it is, he says. Vishnu says, you will see Maya when the time is right, he says. When the time is right, you will see Maya. And Vishnu disappears from there. Vishnu disappears from that point. In a few minutes time, Gandhi finishes his penances in the water, dries himself with the towel, everything. He dries his body up. Then he goes to his house. Remember, he has come now after taking sannyasa ashram. He has forgotten that. He has thought about vanaprastham again now. And then he thought, oh, I had my wife and children. How are they now? Let me go and find out, he says. He goes to his wife and children, the family, because he has given up all that and came and took sannyas and doing all these things. By now he has forgotten that. He has gone there to see his wife and children. They all welcomed him. My husband sannyas, he had come back. Wonderful. He said they welcomed him. The children were very happy. So he started thinking, how wonderful householder life is, he said. So got back into it very quickly. He got adapted to it, the whole life. Got in, and then he was enjoying his life for a few days with the family. By now he has forgotten he was a sannyasi. Not only that, in a few days' time, he fell sick. He fell sick there, very ill, very badly ill. So when he fell ill, he started thinking that I am suffering like this. What should I do now? All these things was going through his mind. And when he wanted to wake up, he could not wake up. His body was painful, very painful. The whole body was collapsing like anything. That at that time, one of his disciples had come to see him. One of his disciples had come to see him. So disciple tells him that come with me, we will try to do something about this, he says. And while lying, he could not get up from there. And he was lying down still. It was so painful. So at that time, a boy born from a very low family, Chandala they called, Chandala boy, was walking through the street. Gandhi saw him, and Gandhi looked at his own children, and started seeing the difference between the Chandala boy and his own children. And the Chandala boy looked very ugly to him, and he started thinking that suppose if my children were born from a Chandala woman, will they be like this? All kinds of thoughts were going through his head. Katanchaka was his name, this person's name, Katanchaka. Though he decided, what he did was, he thought like this, and then because he thought about this Chandala boy, he suddenly died. In the thoughts of this Chandala boy. So, because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Yam yam bhavi smaran bhavam, tejatyande kaleparam. Tantam evedi kaundaya sada tadhava bhavida. Whatever thoughts are there in your head, at the time of death, accordingly, next body will also be prepared for you. So, at that time what happened was, that because he thought about this Chandala body features and Chandala boy's nature, everything, he got the birth. He died and he got the birth as a Chandala next life. He got the birth as a Chandala. Chandala means basically dog eaters. dog eaters. Basically from the lowest category of human species. So he was doing this, and in the Chandala form, he was now experiencing a different life. He was experiencing a different life. He got a Chandala wife. He got children from the Chandala wife. And a big family started growing up. And Chandalas have got their own music also. Their own music they have, isn't it? Everybody has their own music. Brahmanas have their music. Shudras have their music. Chandalas have their music. Everybody has music according to their nature and their vasanas inside. So he developed an attachment to the Chandala music very much. And he was very fond of playing that, you know. So he was living like that, in that condition. In the meanwhile, what happened was his Chandala wife fell very sick and she died. And he was about 40 or 45 years old by now. This Katanchaka. Katanchaka has become 40 or 45 years old. Wife died. And not only that, a big famine happened in that place where he was living. So the whole children also they all died in the famine, and because of that he had to leave the place. He left the village and went away from there. What did Chandala do? This Katanchaka? Katanchaka went away from there. He started moving from one place to another. Eventually he reached a small kingdom where the king was dead, and they were trying to find a new king in that small kingdom. And what they have done, they have given a nice garland to an elephant, and they have made a competition where they wanted all those who wanted to be king, they were invited and asked to sit there. And among them, they were all Kshatriyas who were invited there. So Katanchaka, what he did was, he acted himself as though he's a Kshatriya. He dressed like a Kshatriya and he went there. So they invited him also, asked him to sit there. And it so happened that when the elephant had to put its garland in one of them, that the elephant put the garland on our Katanchaka. So a Chandala had come there in the dress of a Kshatriya, and he was elected as the king on that day. So naturally he became the king there. So Chandala became a Kshatriya king at that point. When he became the Kshatriya king, what he did was, he married a Kshatriya woman, and then he had children from them, but he never revealed his true identity to anybody. He kept himself as a Kshatriya and started speaking like with authority and good administration. Everything was trying to do all that. But one day what happened was, he was wandering in the garden. He was wandering through the royal gardens. At that time, one Chandala came that way playing Chandala music. He came that way playing this Chandala music. As soon as he heard this Chandala music, his mind turned in that direction. And he wanted to relish it. He couldn't control himself. The old taste, vasana, all coming back. So, unfortunately, the Chandala was playing music, immediately recognized him. Who he is. He is my old friend who used to eat together, drink together and play this music. Now he has come and become the king here. Not only that, all earlier times when he was a Chandala, he used to eat meat with him. And they were fond of eating all different kinds of meat. That was their satisfaction. So now this new Chandala recognized him and told him, "What are you doing here?" he said. He said, "Don't say one word," he said. "I'm the king here," he said. That Chandala didn't bother. He gone and advertised everywhere. You got a king who belongs to me, my caste," he said. Normally in those days, Varnashrama system was such that people, upper grades, Brahmana, Kshatriyas and all, when they come through the street, even Chandala had to move away from the street. There used to be such a distance, a certain distance was kept between them. Such was the rigorous way it was followed, these rules. So the dressed up Kshatriya, when they came to know that his identity was a Chandala, they all felt so bad. The Brahmanas in the kingdom, the Kshatriyas in the kingdom, and every one of them wanted to leave that kingdom and go away from there. Living under a Chandala king, they couldn't even imagine in their head. So some of them, when we fall into such situations, there are certain regulations. If something happens like that, what kind of sacrifice you should perform to purify yourself? It's called Chandrayanam. So some of them went to Kashi, to Benares, to perform Chandrayana Vratam. The queen committed suicide, realizing that she was associating with a chandala like this. So the whole thing became chaotic in the whole kingdom because of this incident. What happened? Everybody left from the kingdom. And at that time, our chandala was still in the water and he woke up. It's only an hour, minute and a half has passed. In this 1.5 minutes, in 90 seconds, all these things what I have spoken till now has happened to Gadi. So Gadi could not know what was happening. Gadi was completely confused. He thought that he has come out of the water. He thought he has dried himself. He thought he has gone and visited his family members. And he got this body of chandala. And he was a king in another kingdom. There he married a Kshatriya woman. He had children from that. Eventually he was caught out by another chandala. And he suffered due to all these experiences. All that has gone through him in 90 seconds. 90 seconds. Whereas if you remember, he experienced there that he lived up to 45 or 50 when his wife died in the chandala body. His wife died when he was 45. So in 1.5 minute, 45 years of life he has experienced. 45 years of life he has experienced. So he could not understand. Still, what is Maya? Maya cannot be seen. Maya has to be experienced only. So it was at this point, he still has not understood what was happening to him. He was still thinking, what is happening to me? What's happening to me? This is what was going through his mind. It was at that time, a Brahmana comes in from somewhere and says to him that I'm very hungry, I need some food to eat, he says. So he asks him, where are you coming from? Brahmana says, I'm coming from Benares because the kingdom where I used to live, the king there was a chandala and we didn't know about it. And we all left the kingdom. We couldn't live there anymore. And therefore I've started traveling and I'm here. Gadi could not connect these two things with what was happening now and what was happening inside the water. So that is Maya. Maya can do things what you think we cannot do. Akhadida gadana padiyasi Maya. This is the definition of Maya. Whatever we think cannot happen can be done by Maya. Maya can do that. That is her special power given to her. Krishna has given that. That is Krishna's shakti, isn't it? Krishna's energy. Under the spell of this Maya, the whole creation goes on. Whole creation goes on. And we are all a part of this system. And escaping from this Maya means that is first class devotee. So now you know what first class devotee means. That one who has escaped from this Maya, he is a first class devotee. So it is not easy thing that this Maya, Antariksha Maharshi was explaining through this Maya's role to King Nimi in this way. So Kadanjaga's story, it says like that he, this Kshatriya dress, Gadi has come to realize who he is, that he was still confused about the role of Maya. Then once it so happened, one person came to an ashram and there was a sage living there. So this person who had come, he has read so many books and he has heard many things. So he heard that when one leaves the body, it takes about 2 years or something to move into the next body. He had some understanding like this. So he was asking the sage that, is that true what I have read? He said, then can it take 2 years to move into another body? So the sage laughed at him, knowing his ignorance. Because when, you know, this question is very important, because we all ask this question, isn't it? After death, what happens? This is one question we all ask. Second time, when do we get the next body? The second question. Third, what all happens to us after we leave the body? Isn't it? These are all questions we want to know the answer. And the answer. Please remember, they are all under Maya's control. So anyone give you a definite answer, please don't take it as absolute. Because they are under Maya's jurisdiction. Maya, you can say here, you may be thinking, oh, it could be 2 years. That means, based on the time factor, what we are used to our what is that, the special Swiss watches, we can measure the time here, and say that, oh, based on these 2 years, I'll be floating around, after that I'll get my next body. No, it is not like that. All this is our unknown entities. Why? Because she is controlling that. Maya is controlling. So the sage answered to him, to this question, that it may not take 2 years, he said. It will only probably take 2 minutes or so for you to get the next body. But in that 2 minutes, you may have to live about 70 years life, he said to him. You may be 70 years old by the time you get out of these 2 minutes, he said. The sage answered him. So he got confused. He couldn't understand what the sage is talking about. So he started thinking, this whole thing looks very bizarre. That I was asking a question, how much time it takes to leave this body and move into it. He is still thinking in terms of the time measurement, time and space of this world. Once we leave this body, what happens to us is unknown. And only known to her, to Srimati Maya Devi. Nobody else knows about it. She knows where to go, which way, which direction to go, when where things should happen, what will happen. Such helpless we are in our own condition. Huh? So therefore, the sage answered properly to him like this, don't try to understand all these things. It's not possible. If I tell you it takes 3 years instead of 2 years, will it mean anything? But does it mean anything? Or if it takes 5 years, does it mean anything? It doesn't mean anything. Because once you leave the body, that material nature, she is Maya, she is arranging the next body, next conditions, and everything for us according to our own past activities and the vasanas inside. And therefore, till we escape or release ourselves from the control of Maya, you cannot say anything what will be our situation. But once a devotee, somehow or the other, has developed Krishna consciousness to the perfection, at the last minute, Maya will withdraw from her, from that person. That is the time when Krishna comes and lifts him in his hand, takes him back to the spiritual world, takes him back to him. So that is what the devotee is aspiring for, to get released from Maya's hands and to fall into Krishna's hands. That is what the devotee wants. Devotee's desire is like this, that I have served you enough, but if you start fighting with Maya, look, I don't care for you, I can handle you, I'll deal with you properly, it will not work. It will never work. She is so powerful. If Adishesha Bhagavan, Lord Balaram, Ananta, has become victimized by Maya, what chance have we got? What chance have we got? So therefore, the Andresha Maharshi is saying here that that the moment we fall into Maya Devi's hands, and if we escape from there by Krishna consciousness, then you can make the escape. The moment you fall from Krishna consciousness, you have to fall. There is no question about that. That's why Maya is represented as Lakshmi Devi, Saraswati Devi, Shri Parvati, Durga Devi. The Shakti, the strength, the power, energy is Maya. Under her control, anything can happen. What will happen, nobody can say. Anything can happen. And when does that happen? When after realization the self, when one is self-realized, and if he falls from the self-realized platform, she will again fall into Maya's hands. She falls into Maya's hands. That is where he falls into. Falling down means what? Falling into Maya's hands. Isn't it? Most of the times, our position is very precarious. We have left trying to leave Maya's world. We have not reached into Krishna's world yet. In between, we are struggling this way, that way. And often we get pulled by Maya back into it again. Isn't it? So, therefore, in this game, we play with Maya. It's not a very easy thing. It's not a very easy thing. That is why this question was raised here. That Kavi Maharshi, Hari Maharshi spoke. And then when Andariksha Maharshi came there, the question was raised by King Nimi, that what is Maya? And Andariksha Maharshi is saying to him that Maya, I cannot define Maya, but I can tell you how Maya works in this world. And from these examples, if you can remember, if you can understand, if you can figure out something about Maya, that's all I can say about that. Srinara Maharshi got victimized in Maya. Probably we have spoken about the story before. Krishna and Narada Maharshi once went for a walk somewhere. And Narada Maharshi, well, Krishna says to Narada Maharshi in top of a hill, I want to drink some water. Narada Maharshi goes away to get some water for Krishna. And in that process, he finds some beautiful girl, gets married, forgotten about Krishna, started his family life there. The water never came to brought Krishna saying, Narada Maharshi forgot to bring water. He lived there for a long time, in the householder life. And then one day, Narada Maharshi came to his senses, so I came to bring water for Krishna. So he takes water and goes back to Krishna. Krishna is standing there and smiling at him. Narada Maharshi says to Krishna, what have you done to me? He says. Krishna says, what happened to you? Narada Maharshi says to him all what he has experienced. So that was Maya. So like this, different instances, you will know that Maya in the Shastram is explained like this, so that we also get a little bit idea about Maya. So therefore, it is like this. When we look outwards, it is Maya. When we look inwards, it is Krishna. That is that difference. Moment we look, become more and more inward looking and start experiencing the presence of Krishna within the heart, then we become released from Maya's influence. The more we become outward looking, more we become busy with the external world and become identified with the world outside and trying to control Maya, the result will be we will become more and more implicated in Maya. So Andariksha Maharshi was, that is why this Andariksha word, inward looking person, the name was given to him for this reason, that he was always inward looking. Then what do we do? Once you surrender to Maya, my dear mother, please don't disturb me, please don't give me trouble, let me serve Krishna. This is the mood of a devotee. She does not want to serve Maya. So Maya, when she sees that you are surrendering to her and not challenging her, then she will let you go without giving you too much trouble. Therefore, in the Bhagavadam, all this, if you see, when you discussed about Durga Devi, we say about Kartyayini Mahamayi Mahayogini Adhishwari Nandagova Sudam Devi Padimme Kurude Nama. In the Bhagavadam, if you remember, that Kartyayini Mahamayi Mahamayi, addressing Kartyayini Devi, who was addressing her? Mahayogini Adhishwari. Unless she is a great yogi, how could she, otherwise could she do all these things? Things which no other yogi can do. Mahayogini Adhishwari. The gopis pray to her, please give Krishna as her husband. And that is why the gopis prayed to her, for this reason. They didn't challenge Kartikeyani, oh, now I am Krishna's servant, so I don't care for you. No, they prayed to her. And she recommended to Krishna that these young girls are coming and asking me, they want to have you as their husband. Krishna says, now you stay away, I'll handle the issue further now. I'll take it over from now. That's how Krishna comes in. Similarly, Rukmini Devi also, on the day of marriage, Rukmini Devi went to the temple to pray to Krishna and says to Sri Parvati. And what did she say to Sri Parvati? Rukmini Devi says to Sri Parvati, Namasye Twambige Vishnam Sasandana Yudam Shivam Bhuyan Padirme Bhagavan Krishna Tadarimodaram. Namasye Twambige Vishnam Ambiga. Ambiga is her another name. All these names are mentioned in the Bhagavad. Ambiga, Narayani, Ishani, Swami Sharada, all those that mentions are referring to same Kartikeyani. All are referring to the same material energy. So she prays to her, Namasye Twambige Vishnam Sasandani Yudam Shivam, with her children Subramaniam and Ganesh. Bhuyan Padirme Bhagavan Krishna, please make Krishna as her husband. Stastadanimo Dadam, that, and please forgive, please bless me with that. And this is how Rukmini Devi prayed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we will stop there. It is 7:30. And one more thing, that in the Bhagavatam, while discussing about Maya, there is a lengthy description which will continue next Sunday. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.